Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast, at long last. This is the second episode of our main series for Legend of Dragoon. The goal of this podcast is to generate a recurring variety series covering the fandom at large, from classic conversations about enjoying the game to ongoing news, discoveries, and community content. This podcast also ties in directly with legendofdragoon.org, the global website acting as a central hub for all fans of the game, both casual and hardcore. Now for this one, I wish to apologize that this episode is very, very, very late. About a half year ago, I went out for a horseback ride with Princess Lisa, and suddenly my horse ran into the forest and I fell into a coma. It's cool. I'm back. We're good.
Everything's probably fine.
It's probably fine. Find out for yourself. So, my name is Drew Universe, incidental fan of the game since childhood. I've been around the fandom on and off since then, and for the last 5 years, I've been more active doing community management and various projects to benefit the fandom. I'm obsessed with eating brownies, and now I'll turn it over to my co-host for the day.
I'm Corey slash Monoxide, longtime fan of the game, somewhat recent hermit of the modding channel, and first-time podcaster. In my free time, I play Halo, drink tea, and write excessive amounts of code.
That you do. A quick spoiler warning, for anyone who has not completed the main story of the game, this podcast is likely to have some kind of spoilers throughout as we talk about the story or various elements. So if you have not finished the main story in the game, you're encouraged to complete LOD before listening to this series. And before I go on to the next segment, our main feature today is going to be about reverse engineering Legend of Dragoon, what that means a little bit, and what it could spell in the future. We'll be doing that in another couple segments, and at the end, we'll open the floor for questions if anyone has any. You can also post questions. There's a podcast Q&A channel that you all should have access to post your questions in, and we'll read those at the appropriate time. Okay, so on to community news. For this week, I have a couple surprises for everybody, chiefly the a new contest slash community event that we can all do together in some way, shape, or form. This time it's going to be about drawing a character. So we'll have about 1 week going through to next Tuesday or Wednesday to draw a certain character. And this time, the character will be the first named NPC in Legend of Dragoon, that is Plos, or Plos, P-L-O-S. This character is a elderly villager in the town of Celeste. After the village has been raided by Sandora, Dark comes down, checks things out, finds Plos. He's injured, but he's going to be okay. Tells Dark to go on and figure out what happened to Shauna. Plos is a basic-looking character, just a large brown robe. Short white hair as well. So if you want to take liberties with finer details in the face, that's totally up to you. It doesn't have to be a physical or digital drawing. If you want to sculpt it or whatever, that's totally your prerogative. Just something about Plos. So I've been wanting to do something like this for us for a long time.
I guess one of the advantages of an older game is that you can take quite a few liberties when drawing some of the characters.
Indeed. So, I'll have some more info about that on legendofdragoon.org tonight or tomorrow. It's pretty simple what to do there. On to, speaking of the website, some website progress stuff. I've been doing some various updates to the website. We had plans to do this a little over a year ago, but we had lost our volunteers and I was doing other projects, so I've kind of dialed those back to focus on the website. This includes basic information as well as extended stuff. So things like a Stardust Guide, we now have that. It has a checkbox option as well, so you can checkbox which Stardust pieces you've collected already. And we also have a printer-friendly version in a Google Doc that is linked on the Stardust Guide. So that is all in the navigation at the top of every page. You can go to the resources and then guides, and you should see the Stardust Guide there. I've also added some extra information for merchandise and promo pages. The difference being that merchandise was meant to be sold to the public, whether it's the physical game itself, the rose pendant, phone cards, both common and rare items there, t-shirts, a pad folio, like a little notebook kind of a thing. And promotional items are things that you're supposed to see but not purchase, whether that's demo discs or various other promo items, like the giant stand that was present for E3 2000 that had this giant wall with all the TVs in it. So that's the difference between merchandise and promos. There's a lot of cool stuff there. Some of it you probably know about, some of it you probably don't know about. And if you've always wanted a little more LOD, this is your chance to find out what else there was when the game was released. I know, Corey, you were probably surprised by some of the stuff that we ended up finding.
Yeah, definitely. There's a lot more information than I ever expected to see about a game so old being just like discovered recently.
Definitely. And that's part of what excites me to keep doing it, because we keep finding new stuff. Right before the show, QMQZ was posting these videos I had never seen before, and I was like, darn it, this is the worst time, because I gotta get ready for the podcast. But there's always something new out there.
Yeah, like 30 minutes before.
Yeah, always something new going on. All right, you want to take the next one?
Yeah, speaking of new things, we have some new Discord emojis and stickers. We've got animated battle icons, the little icons that you see at the bottom of the battle screen. We've got a pink potion in case you have an upset stomach. We've got some animated stickers, and I like to draw special attention to the patent monster, which is actually a little thing that one of our community members, Doom Metal, found while he was digging through some of the original patents for the game, looking for information on the 3D model format. You want to talk about that a little bit, Drew?
Sure. Let me just find my place here. We were on the patent monster?
Yep.
Okay. So, as Corey just said, Doom Metal was looking for some documentation to learn more about possibly how to mod the game, and he came across, you know, these files that kind of show several figures of what it would look like when a combo attack happens that is interactive. Now, combo attacks have already been done a little bit before LOD was released, but making them interactive at every step, like a QuickTime event, was novel at the time. It wasn't, you know, oversaturated yet in the market. And so they're doing these different figurines, and it's supposed to show the various slashes and the squares overlapping for your timing press. But at the center of all this is this obscure monster that we have no name for. And I immediately decided, like, we have to put this as a sticker. This has to be a character that we talk about.
Highly recommend that everybody go take a look at it.
We kind of post that sticker in reaction to someone else's message on Discord whenever it's like something astonishing or weird or crazy. A lot of the stickers are, and the emojis are there for like when you're just posting some kind of, you know, a reaction like normal. Lastly, I'm going to mention that I have a frame in there from the North American commercial. This one is kind of special for me because it's a research project I started last year. I ended up getting a actual still frame from the North American commercial production. It's not in super high res, but it's a little decent. And it's a picture of Lloyd with his head cut off next to Dart with the boom mic in the shot and everything, because it's a joke. So basically, that commercial has a really storied history to it, and there's a reason why it's so weird and kind of didn't describe the game very well and didn't help sell the game, I don't think. So in a future article on legendofdragoon.org, I'll be able to tell you all about that really special story.
That is very interesting, and I'm sure that you pestered many people to get that.
Lots of breadcrumbs. Lots and lots of breadcrumbs. Okay, so the last news item we'll mention for now is in relation to speedrunning. For many years, there has not really been a way to skip parts of Legend of Dragoon. You probably know with racing games, there's ways to move a certain way to skip half the track and all this stuff. And in LOD, you can't really do that, except till now, through kind of extraneous method with the debug room. The debug room was put into the game, you know, to help devs debug, we presume. It lets you warp to any location in the game, pretty much. It has Dart standing there with a little tiny Dragoon Dart orbiting the regular Dart. But we couldn't really get it working right, because it would do this thing where you ended up spawning with 3 level 0 Darts, which means they have no HP. And when you enter the first battle, the game automatically goes to a game over screen, so it wasn't usable. But some of the speedrunners found a way past that, and basically that means the world record for if you allow skips has been dropped down from like 10 hours to less than 4 hours, which actually makes the run more manageable for people who don't have a lot of time.
That's some pretty serious savings, and probably makes things a bit easier to route.
Yeah, it's a little tricky. They mentioned like to get the initial run started, but they're allowing a like starting save file for everyone to use to help bypass some of that, so you can just kind of hop in and do it. And it, I'm really curious to see how low they can drop the world record, I'll tell you that much.
Definitely sounds like it's going to make it a bit more accessible.
Yeah. RPGs are like just really long in general. They're not designed for speed in the first place, so this is pretty cool. All right, we have one more small segment before our major segment of the day, and that is story time. So we're going to talk, me and Corey, a little bit just about the game in general, get away from the meta for a moment, talk about some things we enjoyed about the game, whether it's favorite things, people, art, music stuff. So why don't you start it off, Corey?
I think that one of the very first things that really stood out to me about the game, like during my very first playthrough years and years ago, was the whole Queen Fury segment with the Phantom ship. I find that whole segment kind of like humanizes the characters. And you really start to see some of the story developing, like with Princess Luvia and the spirits left over on the ship. And one other thing that I find that I distinctly remember from my first playthrough was fighting Melbu Frama and it taking something like 3 or 4 hours. And just wondering if it would ever actually end.
That would be kind of a bad joke, wouldn't it? Does this boss have infinite HP? I'm only 11 years old.
Yeah, exactly. And I think I probably was around 11 years old at that time. What about you? What's your first memory of the game?
My first memory would be playing the demo in the store, because although that carried with me into my adult life just for being frugal and having to play demos when I couldn't afford the games, I didn't have a lot at home, you know, for a little while either. So whenever I got brought to a Target or something like that, like early Target, it's kind of weird to think about, actually. They would have, you know, some places, depend on where it is. Sometimes you'd have the TV kind of like at eye level or 1 foot above your head. But a lot of them had the TV like at the top of the end of the aisle. So you're standing in the big aisle where everybody's walking back and forth. And you're looking up at this giant TV in the sky and your neck is like, please stop. Please stop doing this. And you're like, I don't want to. I need to know what happens. I've only been here 10 minutes. And it turns into an hour.
I'm just picturing little Drew walking around with a PS1 memory card and looking for stores that have accessible PlayStations.
Wandering Drew. They didn't let us plug in memory cards, I don't know. But that is a good idea. Yeah, so I was very familiar with, you know, the whole escaping Helena prison scene, which I didn't know that's what they were doing at the time. I didn't really pay attention to that intro paragraph crawler. And so you're running away. Lavitz is the first one to really take an arrow in the knee before Skyrim. And, you know, the rest was history. You know, just getting to Dragoon in the Prairie has always been a really special idea to me ever since.
Yeah, I mean, even as a kid, like, you know, you don't really pay much attention to the story, but just the gameplay even still holds up to this day.
The very first thing I saw would be the actual, like, you know, I knew enough at that point to scroll through the left and right to see the different titles. And as soon as I saw the characters with wings, I was like, ooh, what's that? You know, and then it got so much cooler as I got older. If I had known at the time that it was like living dragon tissue kind of stuff, like enveloping your body, I would have been way more obsessed than I actually am.
Yeah.
But yeah, you said the Phantom ship. And the Queen Fury area, it always reminds me of how I wish a little bit more in the game that we could either, you know, walk around as another character instead of just being Dart all the time, or just getting to interact with the different party members from A to B, you know, Maru slash Albert talking, Hashel slash Kongol talking, you know, stuff that I think could be explored a little bit more.
Yeah, it's a very, like, low action sequence, but I always find these just like you know, like low action, like character and world building moments, much more interesting.
Yeah, I think they designed it pretty well. The only problem being, I think the reason that it never happens again is because right after that is when the Phantom Ship came in and made everything a living hell. So maybe that taught everyone to not talk to each other ever again.
Yeah, I think you might be onto something.
That I think I'm onto something there. It's like, how dare you do
Never, never
that?
doing that again.
Stop doing character development. That's not good. Get out of here.
You guys aren't supposed to be friends.
It's probably just, fate saying stop it. Because if you
Yeah.
band together, you might find
Trying to
out.
protect itself.
Oh my God. Well, that's a new theory I'm gonna put in my little notebook.
See, we're developing new theories all the time.
Headcanon. All right, so now we're gonna proceed to the main segment. Corey, our guest host for the day. I'm gonna be doing a little interview here to learn about reverse engineering Legend of Dragoon. What that means, what it can do for us, if anything. So I'm gonna just go with a series of questions, and you answer as you see comfortable. I'd like to know how you kind of got started with this reverse engineering project. Like, what kicked that off? What was the spark?
Well, I originally started got started with reverse engineering of Minecraft mods, mostly just for my own benefit. I wanted to play newer versions of Minecraft, and older mods like Thaumcraft, for example, were just very, very slow at updating. So I would just kind of pick them apart and do the updates myself. That way, I could keep playing them with all the fancy new features of Minecraft. In terms of Legend of Dragoon, it was just a completely impulsive project. I don't really have any reason in particular for wanting to do it other than just really enjoying the game, and I like to take things apart and see how they work.
That's very cool to hear. Kind of like a, tinkery kind of a deal.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, so the next question is, what would be the difference between reverse engineering the game and more traditional modding where, say we're changing the game difficulty with mods, text files and things like that that get injected, changing the script dialogue. What makes reverse engineering different?
Well, with ROM and RAM hacking, ROM hacking specifically, you can do a lot with it, but you do run into certain limitations. For example, like you can make bug fixes, like TFC's encounter rate fix. That's something relatively easy to do. It doesn't require a whole lot of editing. But for larger things, you have to have a really, really deep understanding of assembly language. And you do have limited space. All of the addresses, like the variables and functions, still need to line up. You can't make anything like bigger. You can't really add a whole lot more code. So like if you wanted to add a new feature, that would be very, very difficult. Reverse engineering, on the other hand, what I'm doing is basically taking the original code. And it's sort of like unbaking a cake. Like you would take a cake and dig into it, figure out what all the ingredients are, and then kind of undo that back into the original source code. So in doing this, basically we'll be able to modify this source code in any way that we want. We could remove stuff, edit stuff, even add anything new that we wanted to.
That sounds really exciting with a lot of potential.
Yeah, and I think we will actually talk about some of these new things a little bit later on.
One of the questions in the podcast Q&A channel that I just made, Shiny Tentacruel asks, how does one take apart a PS1 game disc and do you just put it in your CD drive? Basically, what we're talking about with traditional modding is, yes, if you put a game disc in your CD-ROM drive of a computer, you can do a legal backup of that into what we traditionally call ROMs or ISO images or disk image files, what have you. And all that data is then just digital all in one piece. Then you would need to know how to access that data with various tools and programming to modify it that way. I can't really explain it much better than that.
Yeah, the PS1 is kind of unique in that the discs are fully readable by a standard CD-ROM drive. It's very difficult to create a PS1 disc that can be played in a standard PlayStation, but they are readable.
And so what we'll do with those disk images, and you can also just use your physical disks, because what these do is they're played through an emulator, you know, on your computer, whether that's EPSXe, the classic one, or the more recent DuckStation RetroArch with the Beetlecore or whatever, that can play either your digital file or your physical game disks. And then if your disk image was modded, that means that it's a ROM hack that applies throughout the entire playthrough. You know, game difficulty settings like enemy HP or the power of a weapon or the script changes, whatever, last the whole time. A RAM edit is like one where you're doing a Dragoon modifier, that companion app that runs alongside the emulator. So you can turn off and turn on those changes at will, pretty much, and the game will, for the most part, stay stable. So you could like temporarily give Frugal an extra 50% HP, and then right after that battle, set enemy HP back to normal, 100% of what the usual is. So that is the difference, for the most part, is temporary changes versus permanent changes. And those emulators.
Dragoon Modifier is sort of like a very like advanced trainer.
Although the emulators can, you know, depending on how they're built, can bypass some of the PlayStation hardware limits, or even correct some issues in the original PlayStation hardware, like making the 3D models look better like they're supposed to, they still have certain limits they have to adhere to. So that would be the difference as well from reverse engineering. Almost all of those limitations go out the window. It's just a lot of work.
Yeah. I've been working on it for about a year and a half now.
So, I guess that goes into our next question. Perhaps a bit of a review. Does the Java Rewrite act like a supercharged emulator? Like, is this something that can run the game if and when you finish it?
So I wouldn't call it an emulator per se. An emulator implies that that it's basically pretending to be another system, and it's actually interpreting the actual game's executable in its original form. While my reverse engineering project does require you to provide disk images of the game, it only uses those for the assets such as images, videos, 3D models, sound scripts, and things like that. And we do that just for legality reasons. The actual game itself is all running in Java code.
Okay. So, speaking of legality, is this something that people can use eventually? Like, is this something that you can just publish freely and then people can download it and use it? Are there any, you know, restrictions as far as that goes?
Yeah. There's no actual copyrighted PlayStation or Sony data included with this project at all. The user does need to provide the same things that they would to play the game emulated, like disk images, and currently it does need a BIOS extraction. Eventually that won't be needed, but for the time being it does. But yeah, it's all 100% legal.
That sounds really cool. Emulation accessibility is often an issue for people. So although it would be work, of course, and if you ever did it, believe me, I would make sure you get some pizzas or ice cream out of it at the very least. It would be very cool to eventually.
I will work for pizza.
It'd be very cool to eventually have not requiring the BIOS in particular would be a big deal. So it's nice to know that that is at least theoretically possible down the road.
Yeah, that is one of the big goals.
So how far along are you at this point about what you've been doing the last, say, few weeks on the project?
Well, Things were pretty slow going for a while, but actually the past month has been like leaps and bounds. I would say we're probably about two-thirds of the way to sort of like a quote-unquote technically playable state. I can say that like many of the game systems are functional. The main menu is fully functional. You can move around in the submaps, submaps being areas like Celeste, Helena, the Black Castle, anywhere where you're not on the world map. And speaking of the world map, it is also mostly functional. Combat is, I haven't started touching combat yet, and there are major graphical glitches. But the graphical glitches are sort of like I still include that in like technically playable, just not like, ideal.
Yes, I remember your first screenshots of Rose overlooking the mountain.
Yes, the giant disembodied rose head floating majestically into the forest. We'll have to include the GIF of that here somewhere.
We should just keep that in the final release, honestly. As an homage.
That was a very, very simple fix, but it took me months to figure out what was wrong with it.
What are, if there's anything at all, some things that you might have learned about the game, like the way it's built, I suppose, through reverse engineering that you might not have known about how the game is built if you hadn't reverse engineered just on like basic modding? Like, is there anything extra you found just through these methods?
Yes, actually, I made a discovery that I don't think anybody knew about. Most of the game actually runs on a scripting engine. It's not like a standard PlayStation executable. There's, as far as I can tell, there's a proprietary scripting engine, something that they made just for this game. And it actually controls just about everything in the submaps and the world map, everything from player animation, player movement, dialogue, in-game cutscenes, even like controller input.
That's pretty remarkable. So LOD was a unique creation in a lot of extra ways that we didn't know about.
Yeah, and this does sort of lead to some interesting possibilities. I've been working on a reverse engineering program specifically for this scripting language, because it's not like your typical scripting language like Lua or something that a lot of like modern games use. It's not like plain text scripts. It's sort of like it looks kind of like compiled opcodes. So it's not particularly easy to read. So I've been working on some tools that kind of take that and convert it into a sort of like pseudocode that is actually like readable and understandable. And doing this, if we can actually like get a decent understanding of the scripting language, we might actually be able to make like major mods for that actually run in emulators and on original PlayStation hardware.
Wow, that's pretty amazing, actually.
Yeah.
So you're being serious.
Yep, completely.
That's gonna be a lot to take in. I get enough fascination and like fainting and shock from all the little breadcrumbs I find about l extra lore or commercials and all this little stuff on the internet, and you're telling me this, and I'm just like, oh, there's a lot there. All right then.
Yeah, the scripting language is very interesting on its own. I've worked with like multiple game engines in the past, and I've never seen one quite like this.
So I have a question for you that's not on our outline, if you don't mind.
Sure.
In light of this, so you don't have to. You absolutely do not have to. But in case you would like to. Do you think you would be open to coming on as a guest writer to the website once in a while to write, very occasional blogs about your process and like what you're working on and what it's really like under the hood, so anyone who wants to know, or especially those who can understand it, can kind of follow along?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I do keep meaning to kind of document the process, the progress that I'm making.
Very cool. Well, thank you so much.
Yeah, of course.
So, that brings me to my next question. How does it feel to be as insane as myself or the modding duo who are doing the upscale project, like going this deep into Legend of Dragoon, which was released over 20 years ago.
Well, when I first had this idea, I knew nothing about the PlayStation hardware. I knew nothing about MIPS assembly. I jumped into the Discord server, into the modding channel, and asked the people there what they thought about me doing this, and they basically told me that it was probably infeasible, but I make bad decisions. So here we are a year and a half later.
It sounds like you're a perfect fit, because that's how I felt a lot of the time.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't doubt that.
Yeah. Well, you're in very good company, I promise you.
Mm-hmm. And of course, everyone in the modding channel is always super helpful with answering the incredibly specific questions that I have.
Mm-hmm. So I've only got a couple more questions for you in this major segment. Next one being, what are your next goals and or milestones for the project in terms of like specific components of the scripting engine you might want to understand or getting certain parts of the game functional?
So like I said previously, the game is getting pretty close to an actual like technically playable state, where you can actually play the game, but with like major graphical glitches and things like that. So the main goals that I have are, it's sort of an iterative process. So I will reverse engineer a fairly large amount of code. And then I will spend some time analyzing the code, debugging it, basically trying to pick it apart so I can understand it, document it, optimize it. So that's sort of like my current like number one milestone, is to take all this code and understand it. Because as I understand more code, I can basically like rewrite it and remove the reliance on the hardware translation layer that I have built. And in doing so, I can improve performance, I can solve the visual glitches and things like that. My next goal after that is to have fully functional world map and submaps, so that aside from combat, the game will actually play pretty well. And then my final goal after that is the combat.
All right. Real quick, when you say submaps, you are referring to the various background images for all the locations, right? Where Dart walks around.
Yeah, the submaps are the areas of the game that aren't world maps. That is actually the term that the original developers used, and that's one of the just sort of like, you know, interesting things that we found while doing this.
Is this a project that other people can join in and help you with if they wish to? Like, is this an open source kind of a project or something you just need to do yourself?
Yeah, it's fully open source. It's on GitHub. We have a little organization that we use in the modding channel that kind of has the collection of all of our projects. We've got my decompilation stuff. We've got Doom Metal's working on reverse engineering some of the 3D model formats. So we've got his tools on there too. I've got the script disassembler that I've been working on. And I think there's a couple other things on there too.
If people wish to help, what skills should they have if you have a short list of like certain languages?
So really at the moment, I would say the only really necessary skill would be a fairly decent understanding of Java-like languages. But that being said, having a decent grasp on assembly code or graphics programming and trigonometry or the PlayStation 1 hardware would also be helpful. But just in terms of like kind of digging into the code and trying to understand it, And you know, contributing to it. I would say that just like Java-like languages would be the most important thing for helping right now. Of course, down the road we will need beta testers and things like that, but yeah.
All right. Before we move on to any other questions waiting for us in the podcast Q&A channel, do you have any other final thoughts about the project?
I would just like to say thanks to a few people, yourself, of course, for managing the community, TFC and Zychronix for just kind of general knowledge over the past year and a half. They've contributed a lot. Doom Metal for all of his graphics knowledge. Ilepri, I'm sorry if that's not how you pronounce that, for all of the help with trigonometry and stuff. And as well, a non-community member, Problem Kaput, the guy who wrote all of the no cache PSX documentation. He basically reverse engineered like the entire PlayStation 1 hardware. And that's been like instrumental in being able to do this.
Wow, that is very impressive indeed.
Yeah.
We've been really excited to have you here. So let's go on to the questions.
Yeah.
All right. So I guess I'll speak this one aloud, even though I typed it earlier. Shiny Tentacruel asked, speaking of early Target, if I remember the little coupon dispenser machines that used to hang off the aisle shelves. The answer is yes. I don't remember them very much in Target, but in grocery stores, very much. These little machines, these little plastic things, had a little coupon sticking out of them, and I would pull the coupon, and then it would spit out another one. And I was like, ooh, another one. So I'd take that one too, not thinking that it's a one per person. It was all for me, obviously. And I would collect six or seven of those almost every time we went to the grocery store. Looking back, actually, that's probably I would probably prefer that to a newspaper. I don't know. We already answered the one about how do we take apart a PS1 game disc. Shadow 9 asks, what is the end goal of reverse engineering the assembly of the LOD engine? Is it to make your own dev tools that integrate into modding easier, or certain things you want to add or take away?
Really, the end goal of the reverse engineering project is to just fully port it to PC, running on OpenGL, OpenAL, and the like. And I'm doing it this way rather than as a remake, just to keep it 100% faithful to the original. And speaking of like tools and things, I do actually, in the end, plan on adding a modding API so that it's much more easy for just anybody to come in and make mods that are compatible with each other.
Oh, that's extremely cool. I don't remember that being a thing. So is that something that can kind of merge in with the efforts of the Flying Zamboni and Zychronix, as they were also starting off the modding Unity aspect where they're all compatible with each other?
It's very simple. Sorry, it's very similar. But however, this would be just for the PC port.
Okay.
And when I say PC, it's Java and OpenGL, so this will run on, you know, basically any hardware.
So that API would be separate from using, say, Dragoon modifier for RetroArch or DuckStation.
It would be, yes. These would basically be, it would be very similar to, I don't know if anybody is familiar with Minecraft Forge. But it would be very similar to that, sort of an API where people can just build their own mods using Java and just kind of drop them into a mods folder.
All right. The next question, Captain DSC had, I think, a similar question of what the end goal was, and you just mentioned to make a PC port. To be clear about any community projects that we're working on, like as a team, I can't speak for individual projects, but anything community oriented that we're doing together, cannot include fan games for legal reasons. Even myself specifically was once sent a cease and desist letter for something that was even, it was just putting someone else's custom-made Virage model built in Maya into UT 2004, as a statue in a map, and I shot it with a rocket launcher and it had no texture. I still got a letter for that, even though that really should have fallen under modding. But it proves to me that Sony is ready, is willing to be strict about their copyrights. So what we're interested in is doing what we can do without having to watch our backs to just do modding freely and enjoying that right now.
Mm-hmm. And that is the exact reason that this project does not include any assets.
Zikara asks, is there any ways that fans of the game can help contribute to the reverse engineering aspect for those without programming knowledge? So anything besides the beta testing that you mentioned down the road?
At the moment, unfortunately, I would have to say probably not. But, you know, if anything ever does come up, then, of course, I'll post about it.
Okay. Black Label asks where to sign up to be a beta tester. That will be down the road.
Yeah.
We will make sure that we do a post. So the part of the point of legendofdragoon.org is to make sure that all of our community news is centralized and unified. Anything major in the community, you'll hear about it through legendofdragoon.org in our various news posts and articles that we put up. And we write these for legendofdragoon.org, but I make sure that the hyperlinks are shared on various social media, like the subreddit here on Discord, and sometimes on the Facebook group as well. So you'll always be keyed in whichever network you prefer to follow through. But when in doubt, just go straight to legendofdragoon.org. We actually should have an RSS feed active as well. So if you want to plug that into one of your tools, you can do that as well.
Yeah, that will that'll definitely be a big announcement when we get to that point.
Hmm. But that'll be farther down the road. So I think that should do us for the serious questions anyway. I see you, Zamboni, with your Wind Vulcan.
Yeah, we will do Vulcan when I decide that I hate myself.
Yeah, we're not there yet. I'm not even there yet. And believe me, I've dug pretty deep.
Yeah.
All right, so we're going to do a quick community spotlight on a couple things that are going on in the community. And then we'll have our outro. So there's only a couple things I have here for this episode. The thing I will mention is that we've had some wiki progress. The difference between the wiki and our regular legendofdragoon.org website is that the wiki is our encyclopedia, kind of like Wikipedia, but just for Legend of Dragoon. We've been adding things relating to Stardust. We already had a set of text locations for Stardust, but we've been gathering better screenshots, so it's easier to see where those pieces can be located on the screen. And we'll also use those images for the main site as well. Treasure chest indexing to make sure that we have a complete list of all treasure chests available in all areas, whether those chests have gold or consumable items like healing potions or various pieces of equipment that you can put on your characters. We're going to make sure they're all documented, with the probable exception of all the empty chests in the Shrine of Shirley. We'll probably just document the ones in the back room that actually have stuff in them. And we're also working on shop data, so making sure we have accurate listings of what's available in every item or weapon or accessory shop, their prices. And I would like to thank the following individuals for helping me keep the wiki moving along in these ways. So thank you to Claire, Dana, and Amanda for helping with editing these wiki articles. And that's all I have on that one. Corey?
I think that that just about wraps it up for me.
I thought you were going to cover the TMD.
Oh, yeah, sorry. We were going to talk about Doom Metal's project. I completely forgot about that. Sorry, Doom. So Doom Metal has been working on developing a new tool to extract 3D models from the game. They use a standard PlayStation format. However, there are some major oddities that we've found while trying to work with these models. So he has been developing some proprietary tools of his own, which are on the GitHub organization as well, if anybody is interested. He's seeking to basically increase the accuracy of these model rips so that they can possibly even be edited or completely replaced with new models and then inserted back into the game. We aren't quite sure what the limits there will be, But, you know, time will tell.
For several years, we've been learning that 3D models will be one of the most difficult things to modify and put back into the game. For example, like, you know, editing the script was work, but, you know, that's done. So we can have script mods now. And technically, it's possible to do a texture mod, but it's so difficult that ever since the Flying Zamboni did the first one with the white ape that had the Pepsi logo on it, no one has done one since. That's how hard it is. And modeling, the actual models themselves, is like another level as far as I understand it. So to be able to start figuring out how to extract the models properly, even though that's before the whole getting them back in the game part, is at least a little hopeful so we can kind of better understand how these models work.
Yeah, that's kind of the thing. You know, first we need the tools that can actually get us the data out of the game so we can sort of figure out what we can do with that data.
All right, so that concludes our full show now. I'm just going to do a quick few mentions and then have Corey do some promos if he wants to do that, and we'll be done. So really quickly, I would like to mention that we have an ongoing petition at our website, legendofdragoon.org/petition, P-E-T-I-T-I-O-N. I think I'm spelling that correctly. It's also in our navigation bar from legendofdragoon.org. The petition is an ongoing request for a official remake from Sony. It is one element of many components I wish to build with the fan base globally to help convince Sony to do this. But the petition is, I think, a key part of that. So if you have not signed, that might be a good idea if you're willing. That would just be great. I would also like to do volunteer callouts. No matter what day it is, we're always looking for extra volunteers to help us with various community projects or to help manage the fandom in some way, like moderators, stuff like that. So translation, wiki editing, even if you're just an info hunter and you have no formal skills, 5 minutes of help does make a difference. You don't have to have any obligation whatsoever. If you start a project, you do not have to finish it. This is not a place, you know, that pays you for your time, so we understand. But through volunteering, we've been able to do a lot of incredible things, like finding out additional information about the game, the development of the game. It's been a wild ride, as you've all probably seen at one point or another.
I gotta agree with that.
We also, for those of you who are not here in the live broadcast on Discord, if you're not part of the Discord community already and you like Discord, or you would just like a place to chat and have a conversational chat, there aren't any other social networks that really do that except Discord right now, to a popular degree. So we currently, while we're at the Boost Level 3 thing, have a custom URL that you can type into your browser to find us. You can go to discord.gg/dragoon, D-R-A-G-O-O-N, and that should take you right to us. We are also in the server discovery thing, so if you already have Discord set up, you can scroll down to the bottom of your server list, and there's a little discovery button. You can type Legend of Dragoon, or just Dragoon, and we should come up in the public directory as well. And if you have any other questions or comments, you can ask us in the Discord server and tag myself, Drew Universe, or someone else, or you can write to us at contact@legendofdragoon.org. So that concludes my outro. I'm going to now hand it over to Corey for any self-promo or other stuff you would like to say on our way out of here.
As far as self-promotion goes, I don't really maintain much of a online presence, but I would encourage people, anyone interested in either the code or just the project in general, to search for our organization on GitHub. You can just type Legend of Dragoon modding into the search bar of GitHub, and you will find our organization under users.
Okay. So I think that'll do us then. Thank you so much, Corey/Monoxide, for joining us today and being our feature story. It was really cool to hear about all the reverse engineering stuff you've been working on, both, you know, the technical side, even if we may not understand all of it, and also what that can spell for everybody going forward. So we really appreciate all your hard work, and thank you so much.
Yeah, no, it was fun.
Okay, everybody, that concludes the podcast episode 2 for our main series in the Legend of Dragoon global community. I will make sure that we have another episode sooner than the last time. I will not fall off a horse again and get lost or be abducted by a bandit Wingly. No promises, but I'll try.
Yeah, there's always that risk.
It is a risk.
I will be around in the modding channel if anyone has any further questions.
All right, everybody take care, and we'll see you next time. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.